This is HBR episode 1891 entitled, HBR Community News for October 2015, and is part of the series, HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers, and is about 44 minutes long. The summary is, HBR Community News for October 2015.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. It's Halloween and the gremlins are out because I just have been trying to record a show on the Mumble server and Ahuka's having connectivity issues, and then we went and recorded with my daughter of 9 years old. We got 25 minutes in and I realized that I hadn't pressed the push to talk button. So now I'm winging it on my own as Dave Morris is off enjoying himself at Ogcamp. Actually, he's working extremely hard. Big shout out to the guys there at the HBR table, who I believe is McNulu and Chalcom, and of course Through is streaming it for us, well, on a webcam, taking a picture every 5 minutes or something. So looks like they're having a nice time. I'm really miss not being there. There's some amateur radio stuff I saw that I would have loved to have a look at. So there you go. But we will continue on. Hacker Public Radio. Yes, what it is, what it was. Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast network. Just for those of you who don't know, it means that we're all in this boat and we are... We are all in this boat, and if you want to record a podcast, you can. In fact, not only are you allowed to do it, you're actually encouraged to do it. And we're not allowed to say anymore that you're required to do it, because you're not. It's CC by SA, so there is no onus on anybody. But it kind of makes logical sense. If nobody starts contributing shows, then we don't have any shows. Basically, as simple as that. So, what we do here once a month, we take some time out to discuss what's been going on in the community behind the scenes, or maybe if you're not on the mailing list, or if you didn't catch all the shows and you think, hey, I'd like to go back and listen to that, then that's what this show is all about. The first thing we do, of course, is we welcome our new hosts, and thankfully this month that Dave is away and Hook is not here to help us out, I will have the traditional butchering of the names. But fortunately, I think this month it should be okay. Although my daughter earlier on pronounced all these names differently than I would have done. So Clack E, Moral Volcano, Just Me, and The Love Bug all submitted a show for the first time. And we welcome them all with wide open arms. So we'll quickly just nip on through some of the talking about each of the shows that there were. And the first one up this month is a NY Bill, who has a icon or a avatar of a monkey holding a gun, which was very amusing for my 9-year-old. And his show was on IRSSI ConnectBot. And this is something that you can get from FDroid, which will allow you to connect to IRSSI, which is a internet relay chat server. And if you don't know, we hang out on IRC on freenode.net in the channel #ogcastplanet. And there you can talk to people in the world. You can even talk to me, although I'm 8 hours out of sync with everybody else. So what I tend to do is at the end of the day, I take the logs from the previous day, then listen to them, and then respond the following day. So expect a 48-hour delay in replying. So, good show. My own comments about that would be I would be reluctant to do this because I would not like one of my keys unencrypted on my phone, even if it is protected with a password. I just does not give me a warm, fuzzy feeling. But depends on the context, I guess. The following day, the paranoid among us continue with the Ahuka's show from the privacy and security series on how to set up a OpenSSH server. Taking the same approach he has to his LibreOffice series, basically going through this whole thing in small steps and basically showing you what to do and how to set up an SSH server. Loads of links in there, very, very useful. And that brings us to the following day, which was HPR community news. And last month I was out with a chronic back pain, would be a word to describe it. And thankfully, John and Dave stood up to the plate and did the show for us. And that's basically what HPR is all about. People from the community getting up and doing what needs to be done. And I appreciate it that they did that for us. And it was also interesting just to hear this show from the for the first time, as having not participated in it. There was one other show that I wasn't on before, but I was listening on Mumble, just not participating. So it's actually, yeah, it's nice to hear that, and they were very, very, very kind to everybody. Well, kinder than I am. I'm more strict. The next show was Swift 110 with SimCity Build It, September 2015, and discussion about the this game and SimCity and what to do and how to go about building it. I'm not particularly into games, to be honest. I lost quite a bit of my life on the Lemmings back in the day, but I do see the benefits of the kids are using Minecraft on the Raspberry Pis to. And there's a coding element in there, and I do see it as an interesting way to get kids involved in coding. So there you go. But good show. And there's more later on in the year. Hold on, I should be doing the comments for these shows as I go along. Let's see if there are any comments. You see, if Dave isn't here or Ahuka isn't here, I make a complete mess out of the whole thing, which is unfortunate, I must say. But so there haven't been any comments on the shows we've discussed so far. I knew that all along. Then we had today with a tech TIT radio 21. I thought I had better links. 5150 saving us all from actually needing to do any work. I find it just easier to wait for a 51's links and just browse through them rather than parsing through news feeds myself. Then the next day was our 10-year anniversary, and as luck would have it, on that day when it was released, there was actually 10 years. So we nailed that, more out of accident than by planning. But it was really, really awesome to talk to Droops. And this was another weird one because I never have Mumble fall out of me like that. And then just 5 minutes in, the whole thing disconnected. And then we reconnected again. You probably heard me coming in and out. But again, I was, as I don't edit the shows, as you know, it was only later that I realized I was able to sit and enjoy Droops. Droops is one of those guys who got me into podcasting in the first place, and I have the absolute utmost respect for him. And so much so that, you know, what he's doing now with those kids is absolutely awesome and absolutely amazing. And it was actually great to go back and hear what was going on, because I was the other side of the world when this whole thing was started, and I was just contributing like anybody else. So I had no involvement whatsoever in the initial setup, and really all I've been doing since then is just doing these shows once a month and replying to email, posting the odd show now and again. So Droops posted a silly comment. And then we had Jay. Wow, public school supervisor, hearing about all your classes makes me a little envious, to be honest. Dave Morris said, I love this interview, really enjoyed it. Congratulations. Thanks, Ken. No need to thank me. It was Droops who took the time out. It was Droops who took the time out to start this. You know, let's not forget, it's easy to keep the momentum going once it's been going for so long. These guys set the whole thing up in the first place. They had no clue whether it was going to take off or not. So awesome, them. It was great to get an understanding of more history of HPR and given further insight into who the founders were and their what their motivations was. And Droop sounds like a hell of a teacher. Couldn't agree with you more. And just to that vein, I've been re-listening to this episode on the train, and I've been making note of the people Droop's mentioned in that, and it's definitely my intention to go back and interview a lot more of these so we can get our actual history going on in there, and then have this in our about page again. Awesome stuff. Okay, following day we had text formatting options are explored, and this is the LibreOffice series. And this month, they were doing text styles and text formatting toolbar. And this clarified an awful lot of stuff for me. And again, look in the show notes with a link to Ahuka's own website where he's got screenshots on this. So very good stuff there, as always, very professional. You know, it's embarrassing that we have shows of this quality on here and we're just passing them off every month has been, yeah, this is what we expect from Ahuka. You know, if he submits anything of lesser quality than this, we will all be annoyed. Anyway, Clarkey did a show, 15, motivated by the 15 excuses not to record a show for HPR done by Nightwise. And he had a link in there, discussed the microbe log as well, manifest, which is a project that he would like to get started, basically looking for using HPR as a motivation to get back into developing that. And I really hope he does, because he submitted two shows, so seems to be on a roll here, as the following day was recording a HPR episode on the fly on the Android phone. He installed URecord from Android, and basically gives a review of the software. So another option there, if you have got an Android phone, no excuse to not use that. I actually use URecord as well. I found it very handy for taking minutes of meetings, and then you're just hands-free for the rest. BZ submitted a show the following day based on what's in your bag, and USB encryption, USB stick and a mouse, and Klipsch earbuds, which I'd never heard of before. $80 shipping. And these are always of interest to me. And has very, very handy tool in there to just go back to my previous comment about securing your SSH keys on your Android phone. There is fallocate-l3gmyimage.img, which will mount an encrypted Lux partition. So pretty cool stuff. The following day we had hacking a belt to make it fit, and this is a cool episode. Kind of makes sense. The only thing is I would probably be hacking it to add on more than hacking it to make it smaller. But I'm always interested in these sort of things, and this, hardware hacks or fixing stuff that's broken. It really gives me a sense of achievement. In the previous episode in the previous attempt to record this that wasn't recorded, my daughter was describing how the last thing we fixed was these earphones, where she was able to fix one of them stopped working, where the coil had fallen off. So she unscrewed it, put the coil back, put it down with sellotape, and was able to fix the headset, the one that I'm using right now. So absolutely love this sort of thing. And now that John has made it an official thing that hackers are interested in, then you never know, I might actually do some more shows about that sort of thing. I must say we're very light on the comments this month as well, so there's only been three so far. The Arduino Klaatu was back with the Arduino Bluetooth how-to, and he will get the commenters out for sure. And this is a continuing, what will be soon, if it's not already, a series on Arduino. And this was the super, he's on about super basic Arduino controller for controlling Arduinos and getting to talk over Bluetooth. And Mike Ray says, really good show, Klaatu. Really enjoyed anything about Arduino and general fiddling with electronics. Currently mucking about with an RF transmitter and receiver modules that have considered using Zigbee. So this show was of of interest. Look forward to Mike doing some shows on that. Clark, a year is on a roll. My Road to Linux, installing Watchtower on the Amiga, as he reviews 22 years of Linux usage and described basically everything, or basically the road to Linux, and it was pretty interesting to see all that stuff. 22 years, that's a long. Speaking of somebody else who was talking about stuff to compute away from his laptop, and mobile computing and stuff, was Chasar, and using an Nvidia Shield tablet with Wi-Fi, with a case, with a Bluetooth mouse, with a keyboard, with a power hub, and then free and open source Android apps. So there's quite a few here that I had known about, quite a few I didn't know about, one or two that I installed after the fact, and a few that I probably will come across if I ever need to. The only thing about this was I was just wondering, why not use a netbook or something where just everything's connected and you don't have all these little bits? It would be very fiddly for me on the train, I think, for my personal use case. But yeah, maybe you could comment as to why you didn't, you know, what the advantages of this over a laptop. Don't know if I was, that was particularly clear. Nightwise saying don't get locked in, and to be honest, when I heard this I was going to think it was a discussion about not getting locked into proprietary software, but actually it was about not getting locked into your beliefs, just go with the flow and or you know, use the best tool for the job. And I will say I don't agree with him, because he's well able to take the fact that people don't agree with him. And I don't agree with him on the point of view that if you don't use the software, then if you don't use the software, then it won't. If you don't use open source software, you can't report the bugs. If you can't report the bugs, it can't be improved. That's basically what it comes down to. So, yes, absolutely correct. Even Nahuka said that things like Impress are not as good as PowerPoint, but they will never be as good as PowerPoint if people don't get involved and use them and improve them. There you go. That's my feeling. But yes, he does have a point. Use the best tool for the job. So I, there is a certain thing called morals and ethics, and your personal beliefs do come into it. So it's not, I don't think it's just as black and white as all that. So, but a good show nonetheless. Hopefully this will inflame him so much that he will come back and do more shows for us. More bash scripting tips. Well, apparently Dave is a genius at many, many, many things. And I have, as soon as I heard this show, I went and updated many of my scripts, particularly the ones related to dates and log files. That is just saved my life so much. So this is going into my must-have series, as always. And this got the commenters out of the woodwork. First comment was by Frank. Thank you, Dave. Very nice piece of work. I've been trying to understand regular expressions, I guess, because I like puzzles. In addition to giving me a better understanding of Bash, the examples you gave show similarity with some regular expression syntax, which in turn gives some context to regular expressions, so that it does not seem to be quite so foreign a language. Dave replied, regular expression subject is a complex one. I've been wondering whether I should try and pass on what I know about it. Duh, Dave. This man is the HPR admin and still doesn't know that should I record a show for HPR by default means yes. Anyway... Dave. Yes, there is nobody on the planet who works with Linux does not want to understand regular expressions better. Anyway, strictly, this brace expansion topic is in an area of using patterns to match file names. Confusingly, this is similar but not the same as regular expressions. In the later episodes in this NOT series, I want to talk more about file name matching, then look at regular expressions in the context of Bash. Really, the regular expression subjects could be a standalone and should look at what's available in Bash, grep, sed, awk, etc. I use Perl regular expressions the most, but I hesitate to go too deep there because they are mind-blowing. Yes, they are. But we also need grep, sed, and awk regular expressions help. In fact, awk and sed, I have the feeling that my experience with them are just a mere toe in the water of the deep abyss that would be those tools. So if you are familiar with those tools, please don't assume that everybody is. Record a show and send it in. Thank you very much. Frank replied again. Indeed, regular expressions are complex. They make my brain hurt. Frank, I'm with you, my friend. I'm with you. Seeing some kinship with shell commands, some indication that whoever precipitated regular expressions did not just make it up from a whole cloth is something comforting. I recently stumbled across a beginner's tutorial with a link, DigitalOcean Community Tutorials, which I went to and is actually very, very good. Link in the show notes. What makes it so good is that it uses GPL key found on every Linux computer for the exercise. GPL text. So you can practice examples and try different options as you read along. So the text that he's using, is the GPL. So it's pretty cool. So Dave says, I skimmed through the tutorial and it looks very good. Thanks for the pointers. So pretty cool. Is this thing still recording? I really hope so. Okay, the following day, LibreOffice Multimedia. And this is something that I have wanted to do and I've struggled with. I really have. So much so that I just didn't bother and went video and then Alt-Tab to an external player. But Ahuka goes through and clarifies it. And there, I think he makes very good points where, you know, LibreOffice is lacking in certain things. Then, Moral Volcano, first-time host. Excellent, excellent show. Had a listen to this. Does not like the fact that GNOME 2 went away, I'm guessing. But makes absolutely valid points. And earlier I was trying to explain it to my 9-year-old daughter and I met it akin to you're playing on the playground and some of the children change the game. Is that nice? Yeah, sometimes it is. And if they'll do it and they don't tell you, then is that nice? No, it's not. So that's kind of what went on here. But a very good links here in the show notes as well, and where you can get various different fonts as well. So cool stuff. The only thing I was thinking, Moral Volcano, when you're doing a show, don't waste all your topics on one show, please. Record multiple shows, guys. Oh, geez. Okay, the following day, just me slammed my taste in coffee. No. Actually, the vast majority of coffee drunk in Ireland is Nescafe Instant. So yes, to be honest, I don't think I could tell one brand of coffee from the other. And as it turns out, most studies on wine connoisseurs can't tell the difference between red and white wine if they're put into two different bottles. And I strongly suspect that probably people can tell the difference in coffee. But I found some coffee here. I find the coffee in the Netherlands, the regular stuff, is very burnt to my liking. So I found a nice Ethiopian coffee that is in the supermarket. And that's the one I drink. Pretty cool. But if you're into coffee, and I'd like to know from the other coffee connoisseurs on here, because it's now a series. Are you all happy? Their coffee is an official series on HBR. Soon we'll be making kitten series. But yes, if people will insist on making coffee shows, then go ahead and please do so. Oh yes, Diceware passphrase from John Duart. And I, oddly enough, I hadn't heard about this before. And then afterwards, I kept seeing it come up everywhere. Basically, you have a whole go of regular words from a dictionary, are assigned a number, you toss 6 or so dice, and the number that comes out is fine. The only thing I would suggest if you're doing this is cleft, cam, synod, lackey, year, and walk. I don't know how easy those would be to remember, but yeah, okay, fair enough. That's as unmemorable to me as anything. So what I tend to do with my passwords is I have several different things inside of them, and then I will maintain in each of them that is always a one thing in that series. This is always one thing in the next series, always one thing in the next series, in the next series. And one of the series might be, I don't know, rivers. It isn't, but it could be. And the next series could be, you know, types of monkeys or something. And then you do the leet speak thing on it, but not like just the easy leet speak. Start looking at the keyboard and going, yeah, if I was to put if I was to make a T, for example, be a chevron over the 6, like the Chinese hat, with a pipe, that would be a T. So every time I come across that, make up your own leet speak letters and then use that. So then it's a phrase that you it's a thing that you remember. And of course, you know, one of your series should be heavily involved in numbers. I don't know, maybe you have a number and then you, or you think of a word and you convert that to the letters to numbers or something. I don't know. So yes, anyway, whatever works for you. But it's an interesting approach. And if it works for you, then good. Now for something completely different. This was a shadowy figure who wanted to know if it was okay to asked, was it out there? Yes, it was out there. And but we don't, as admins, ever check what the shows are. So the shows that are put up there are the shows. We do not edit in any way the shows. There's two ways for that. One, it's a traditional thing, as in Droop said it there on the 10-year anniversary. You know, why should I or anybody else, you know, say whether it's a good show or not? There you go. It was a very period piece, I must say, at the time. I don't know if it would pass the code of conduct thing for certain people, but it did make me chuckle, I must say. And it, awesome that's a 5150 shop are selling my earbuds with a knot in them. So I'm patent pending on that one, just so you all know. I've got a lot of intellectual property tied up in that particular idea, so I will be chasing these people down. So the following day was a short walk with my son, Dave, who is, I'm not allowed to say you owe me a show anymore, which is fine. I'm happy with that. Unless, of course, you say you're going to do a show, in which case you owe me a show. It's a personal thing. It has nothing to do with HPR or the commitment or the GPL. If you say, Ken, I'm going to send you a show now, I will go. Yes, you owe me a show. So... oh, as he went along, he just kept digging himself into a deeper and deeper hole. Dave, why did you do this? Now I have all these shows to keep track of. Although these lapel mics look really, really cool. I was thinking of seeing if I could get one. But by the time I bug... Dave is, of course, from thebugcast.org. Where all good music meets, so long as it's Creative Commons. Metric versus Imperial Measurement. Yes, that he did that. And made many promises of different shows to have. So that was it for the shows for this month. And I missed some comments from GNU Linux or TM. Just listened while walking to the dog on a cloudy, spooky night before Halloween. Loved the delivery. Working in all the HPR references, and is going to learn more about the MicoPad T02. I must say the production quality on the Shadowy Figures theater performance was absolutely awesome. I was funny because when the rain started, I was going, "Hey, I know where he got that. He got that at freesound.org because I use that as white noise in work when I want to go into the zone and people are being loud." So pretty cool. That was that for the shows. Let's see, mailing list discussions. Two main topics this month. Both of them concerned the community news. So some months there's a lot of chatter. More months it's nice and quiet. There was a few comments on previous shows from back in August. NY Bill's Multimeter Mods Part 1. I got a comment by Neandergeek. Like that. Like that handle, yes. Just got my Unity UT61E and still waiting on my USB cable. I may get a LED backlight added tomorrow. I'll follow up when I do. One of the photos had what looks like a storage organizer for resistors in the form of 1/4 of a circle. Do groups of 4 of them make stackable rings? Are they affordable and are they useful? And my Bill, we tune in next month. Find out what NY Bill says about that. In the September episode, Frank Bell did an episode on introduction to W3M, command line web browser. There were two comments. Comment number one was from Tom_Len. Hi, I just discovered this tool, W3M, and I was wondering if it would be possible to access to a page that requires a login and password. I need to be able to be done automatically from the command line. I couldn't be pressing keys. It's a headless server. Do you know if that's possible? I would need to grab some text, but once I logged in, the URL remains the same. So he gives the URL. According to the man page, you can automatically log in with a proxy. Perhaps you could bend your will, see the pauth argument in the man page. I'm skeptical that's what you want to do. Now, I will reply back to Tom underscore now, saying that this is absolutely possible using wget, and it's absolutely possible using curl on a headless server. Not a problem. But that will save it out to a file, and I don't know if that's, if you want to do an I'm not 100% sure you want to do an interactive session here, but then again, you're saying it's a headless server, so it seems to be that you want to script it. But you can definitely do that with curl, with wget, and in both of them, in curl especially, you can change the user agent string if there's anything funky stuff going on there. In curl, you can also do pushes as well as gets. And you can do, you can even do connections over SSL and stuff like that. So that's probably the way you want to go. In response to Gabrielle, even fires a mouse in a maze on the Raspberry Pi. The comment number two was Eric with a better mouse. And here's my code for creating a maze in Excel. It's actually fairly easy to make a true maze without any blocked sections. Basically, it grows out of walls from the edges. As long as you don't connect with other walls, you'll end up with a graph where every space can be visited from every other space. Akamai.net doesn't seem to like me posting code, so I'll just describe the acronym. If you could email that, Eric, please, to admin@hpr. I'd like to see what you're doing. Basically, he says you create a square of rows from x with odd numbers, you put a w in each. So I'm not going to describe that because it's a show in itself. Gosh, hold on, perhaps Eric, you could record a show on this, and then in the show notes you could upload the Excel document describing that. That would be awesome. His comment goes on very much to describe everything, and Gabrielle replies, that's an interesting algorithm. I can intuitively see why it works, but I want to think of how I could prove it. One would put a start and end point in the maze. In that case, the transverse algorithm through the maze generated like that would probably just be a right-hand rule variant, since the wall would be a single connected component. The truly random generation that I mentioned in the podcast does not guarantee that, of course, meaning the right-hand rule would just lead the mouse in a circle forever. Actually, if you want to, can you go and please read this? Or Gabrielle, can you record a comment back to this? General rule of thumb, if your comment starts hitting an essay, then can you record a show, especially if Dave isn't here to read all this stuff out for me. So I was going to two ways, brilliant mind. Could always make the cheese R, scan the maze and mark connected components, ensure the mouse and the cheese land on the same connected component, scan the maze, mark the connected components, and make a pair of independent connection components, break walls between them and connect it until the maze gets a single component connection. Your generation approach produces much more centered, generally pleasing looking maze. I'm looking to see if there's a good way then to take it and shake it up a little to allow for disconnected wall segments and such a while remaining while retaining such pleasingness. Of course, there's another possibility to add the notion of teleporters to the maze. Smiley face. Thanks for the insight on the algorithm. That's what I like best about my little exercises. There's so many variations you can make on it. So, very true. In response to the awesome epic guide to KDE, Geddes replied to a comment from me, saying, thanks Ken, glad to know that you found the article useful and agree with the worthwhile idea. I'll be looking around for follow-up and see if I can find another one. Absolutely cool. That's where he took from Linux format and read out an article. Not just read it out with feeling. And there he also posted a reply back to John Culp, who had previously said he really enjoyed the episode. He wants to thank you and Dave for the encouraging feedback from last month's Community News episode. I'm pleased that you both agree with it being a good idea and to read Creative Commons articles. I'll take that as approval from the HPR community. As I said before, you don't need approval from the HPR community, you just do it. I'll even take requests if anyone finds something of interest that I can convert to audio licensing permitting, as you rightly pointed out. Hope it's not too long before I can post another show, whether it's original content or not. Nope, definitely, if it's Creative Commons and the license allows it, then go for it. Personally, I don't think I could do that because, as you can tell, I'm struggling just to read out comments here, whereas you seem to be able to read an article and make it like you're just having a conversation in the pub, which is an awesome gift. Dave Morris's episode, and this here is a Raspberry Pi that will very soon be over there at my printer, because this network printer that I spent over the odds to buy, the network printing function has actually stopped, so I'm printing now through my wife's PC. So it means that in order to print, I need to go through my wife's PC. So I'm having a Raspberry Pi on the inside of the network to connect to the Raspberry Pi in the intranet, which I connect to via Stepping Stone server, which I then connect to from various different places. Yes, I am paranoid, but Dave, and then as I was listening to Dave's episode about this, I was also down in the recycling shop in the Kringloopwinkel. Thanks, John Culp, for that tip. And I was looking at perfectly good printers there that are not network attached anymore. And I was thinking, hey, if I had done a little bit of research or just got lucky, there are printers down there for a tenner, probably don't have any ink cartridges in them. Refer to my continuous ink supply system printer. Find a good printer there. Make sure it works with continuous ink supply system. Slap on a Raspberry Pi that you have anyway next to it with a USB connector. Bob's your uncle, Meg's your aunt, and Tom's your first cousin. Yes, indeedy. Anyway, back to the comments for the episodes, because I'm 100% sure you have no interest in me listening to this. So, we had a... remote scanning comment previously from John Culp, and at the time I was thinking why would you ever do that, and since then I've been thinking, yes, it would give you a lot more control than the printer itself if I can control it remotely with a scanner, because I do have a sheet feeder on this thing, and then would allow me to take it. The problem with it is the sheet feeder thing has it works, and then I have to, it saves it to a particular file format, and there's no control. You basically don't have any control. It's just dumped on a network location. Whereas if I'm scanning that in using a Linux machine, I can then set up our tool chain where I can scan and then do ORC perhaps on it, or at least put file names in that are mean something to me. Anyway, back to the comments. Meanwhile, back at the comments. Dave Morris, remote scanning exception. Thanks, John. I like that routers can run printers like this, but suspect the features are limited. And John was on about getting a router that he got in the Goodwill shop. Back to Dave's comments. I have plans to experiment with cups, perhaps configuring other queues for different size stationery, for example. I also have a very old DEC LN03 monochrome laser printer, circa 1987, which I'd like to hook up if it still works. It needs a serial connection, though, which should be fun. The scanning capability is good to have and has been used more than I would have expected. Quality is not particularly high, but it's good enough for most purposes. Then we had a comment by Turtle. Nice show. Here is the cups PPD for the DEC LN03. It just proves that people are subscribed to the HPR feed as well. It also has the manual. And all you need is a USB to serial adapter. Looking forward to hearing about getting it running and putting that on the Pi and other printer. Cheers, Turtle. Dave Morris replied, DEC LN03. Thanks, Turtle. I had not got as far as checking drivers and manuals. Very useful. From my initial researches, this is with anything with Dave, you just dangle some tech in front of him and he's gone. Anyway, and I will not have other people use Dave in such a manner that I use him on HPR. From an initial research, back to the comments. From an initial researches, I wasn't sure whether a serial adapter could drive the printer. I didn't know if it needs flow control, for example. However, I should continue to investigate. I also have a 132 column matrix printer somewhere in the attic, but I think it has a Centronics parallel connector. Wow, that takes me back. So I suspect that it will be a challenge to get that working. Bob Evans replies, connecting to legacy printers. Hi Dave. Thanks for this timely episode. I'm considering a Pi to serve my HP LaserJet 2200 printer on my home network. The DEC LN03 uses RS232, RS422 for a serial connection. You should be able to use a USB to serial converter. I used an LN03 with PC clones and I was able to run a serial link as fast as 19... 200 baud. User manual will indicate how to set serial parameters via DIP switches near the data connector. Excellent. I suggest verifying the print engine still works by printing a few test pages before trying to connect it to a computer. I think there is a small square white button on the back that indicates printing of a test page. It is probably difficult now to get toner or replacement parts like feed rollers for the LN03. When the nylon gears inside my LN03 fractured, I finally ditched the printers after about 20 years of use in the home office. Comment there. Would it now not be possible to print off a replacement part on a 3D printer? Perhaps be an interesting topic for somebody. Anyway, be aware that there are a few different LN03 models. Mine was the rare image printer that would only accept PostScript. The model will determine the driver and the settings that need to be used. The LN03 always keeps the fuser unit hot. This is a big power consumer and harsh on the mechanics that transport paper and the photosensitive band. There used to be a USB to parallel converter available for purchase. If you can find one of those, you might be able to easily connect to a matrix printer, Bob. Dave replies, thanks for the information, Bob. I haven't checked the LN03 works yet. It might not since it's old. I'm pleased to hear there's a good chance of running it from the Pi though, if it does though. The university I worked with bought a pair of LN03s with a VAX cluster in 1987, and I had a job of setting them up back when then under VMS. I'm pretty sure neither of them were image printers. We later bought a LPS-17, I think, with a LPS-32. Much faster, higher volume printers with duplexers. I didn't offer to take them home when they were phased out, though. I might have some supplies for the printer, but not much of anything. So it might be a short-lived experiment, even if it does still print. I need to check out the printer matrix, the matrix printer as well, though I don't really have a use for it anymore. And only one box of line printers. By the way, people, before you throw anything away, don't throw it away. Always check with computer museums and other places. I don't know actually where other places would be. If you have ideas of other places, before you throw out stuff, just check and see if somebody else might be interested in having it. As I said, those older pieces of kit are probably getting fairly difficult to come in contact with now. Kuvno had a comment which I missed. It was an awkward talk with two young computer users, and this was hosted by Kuvno himself with his children in response to Frank, who said it was absolutely delightful. Combiner agreed and said, yes, it's not awkward. It's just as natural as a podcast can be, and real bliss. Keep it up. Someone in the Urals is waiting for more stuff like this. Wow, there you go. Lafayette Library Makerspace by John Culp. There was one comment by someone called 3D Print. Great program, thanks. Lutzbot is open hardware. The other one, I think not. STL files, as far as I know, are not editable. They're binaries. Problem of open washing in websites. Original CAD not available. Use FreeCAD to do more. Magnets. Use a tight tolerance to go in, but use a large chamber inside. Oh, yes. I think he's talking about the modifications for the stand, perhaps. One comment on Ahuka's home SSH server, which I apparently skipped over, by Katie Murray. SSH passwords, just a quick clarification on a point made just after the 14-minute mark. With regard to remote logging to an SSH server from the internet. Ahuka makes the comment, you're transmitting the password in the clear. According to the SSH man page, all communications between the client server, including password verification, are done using public key encryption, which is correct. Finally, and this is in quotes, finally, if other authentication methods fail, SSH prompts the user for a password. The password is sent to the remote host for checking. However, since all communications are encrypted, the password cannot be seen by anyone listening on the network. End quote. When using open and possibly hostile networks, something to keep in mind is to watch for the warnings for server certificate fingerprints has changed. This comes up for a server you use regularly. Be very, very suspicious. He loves hearing about security stuff, so keep it going. Smiley face. Yeah, valid points there. And that's pretty much it for today, I think. Sorry Ahuka couldn't join us, and also sorry that my little helper I wasn't able to failed recordings happen all the time, I'm afraid, folks. That's just it. I don't have anything else to say at this point in time. There wasn't a lot on the mailing list, other than to say the photos of Ogcamp. It's been a while since I've been in the UK to Ogcamp, and the tablecloth that we have over there is absolutely covered in signatures of people who have contributed shows to HPR. This is really, really cool thing. So if you want to be one of those people who, whether it's on the in the US or in the UK or here in Europe, comes across a HPR table, you will be able to sign your name on that table by simply recording a show for Hacker Public Radio. What more motivation do you need? So also, please consider, if you're not involved in HPR or have no desire to record a show, see if you can get more people to record shows. I'm particularly interested in other types of voices that you might not hear on HPR as much. So read into that whatever you mean, whatever you like, but the more the merrier. That is what we need. Okay, and tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free. Hacker, you'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.